Yo, I don't know if the quality on this thing is any good. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? It's not like you can talk or anything. If you still want to chat, I guess you can use Twitch. I don't know if I'll go read it. I feel weird, man. My emotions have been all over the place. But let's chill for a bit before I go to bed. Tomorrow I'm starting my regular job again. And I'm not looking forward to it. But we gotta eat, you know? Wait, let me post about it on my server, I guess. Link. It's so hot today. At least it was very hot today. It still is. It's very warm. I'm sitting on my bed in my attic room. It just started raining, so I hope it cools off a little. So today I went, I didn't really. So for the past 2 something weeks, I've been like socializing a lot, and it's honestly been very exhausting. It was fun, but it's very tiring. And today it was one of my I already made this appointment like way before, but I was gonna hang out with some people and celebrate someone's birthday, like get dinner together. So we were talking about it in like a group chat with the people who were coming. It's like, oh, we need to get a gift, and it's like, oh, who the fuck has time to get a gift? And I was like, okay, well, I guess I have time. So I went out and got the gift. And then we arrived at the fucking restaurant, and they sent us a text that they couldn't come because something came up with like their family. So we were just there. It was like, oh, well, that was for nothing. Pain. What is happening? I don't know what's happening. I'm just vibing. I thought maybe I should just do like a space or something. I can't tell you guys why, but oh, I've been feeling so weird lately. Like, I don't know, anxious? And it sucks. And I thought maybe. Not maybe. Well, we can't exactly talk about it 100%, but maybe. Don't know. Maybe this will help. I've been reading a book about changing your habits. I only read one chapter so far. I've been reading it before I go to sleep, so I'll be less on my phone. Wait, I was gonna. At here. Does this work? Is this a working link? Okay, this works. Oh. I'll be okay. Thank you for asking. Oh, it's so hot. I'm dying. Wait, if I turn on the fan, will you guys hear that? Wait. It like, you know, when you're on the phone, it's always so windy? Do you hear it? There you go. I wish I knew how to read. You'll never learn how to read? Oh. Oh, shit. My cable's too short. I'm also charging my phone because it was dying. Let's see. Should get a bookmarker. Maybe I should just start over, except like skip the introduction. Okay, let me see if I can put it down. I need a fucking night light. It's so dark here. Wait, is this Yuria's chat or Dot's? It's mine. It still says that I'm hosting Dotoville. I don't know why that is. Because she hasn't been streaming. Do I just unhost? Unhost. Okay. I'm sorry, Dotoville. Okay. I feel awkward reading this now. It stay like that since last week? Yes. I'm sorry. Wait, does it st say like on Twitch chat that it was Dottles? It was hard leaving when I left on. So we had that Twitter space last time together, and then the morning after that, I went to the airport to go home. And to drop her off as well. I didn't want to say goodbye to everyone. Yeah, it had her offline screen. Oh, that's so weird. Don't know, we just hugged, and that was that. And then I was alone, flying home alone. Very sad. Yo, there was so on the on the flight home, I sat next to like an old couple, like really old people, and they were very kind. She was constantly asking whenever the flight person crew, it's like, oh, do you want coffee? It's like, oh, she'll ask if I want to. Oh, okay. She kept asking. And she couldn't reach for some stuff, so I helped her. And she was like having trouble with the in-flight entertainment with the touch screen, so didn't know how it worked. And she was playing with the volume, even though she didn't have like earbuds or headphones. I told her, she's like, oh, the flight attendant will give us earbuds. Like, oh, okay, wow, that's so great. But at some point, it's not her fault, but she kind of started smelling like piss. I thought it maybe was from the toilet first, you know, on the flight, but she I think it was just like elderly stuff, you know. And I put on my face mask and took a mint. So I could breathe that. It was horrible. On the way to the US, there was like the flight was not as busy. So I said there was an empty seat between. So I was sitting in the next to the window, and there was like an empty seat, and then there was an old lady. Also an old lady. That was so weird, by the way. She like the flight was like over 10 hours, and she didn't She didn't watch a movie or she didn't read anything. She was just sitting there, just staring. The only thing she read was the ingredient list on some of the food that we got on the flight. That was interesting. I don't know how you could amuse yourself like that. I downloaded The Boys to watch and Stranger Things. So I didn't really use the in-flight entertainment. I just watched those. And I played games on my laptop. Contemplation for 10 hours. Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, I was gonna read. I was gonna read. So I've been reading a book called Atomic Habits. I just started it, so I'm like at the beginning, and maybe I'll just read chapter one again, so to catch you up to speed. Because otherwise, I think this is the only one that I have read. I was like somewhere part two, and then yesterday I was reading it and I passed out. The only thing that I have right now is my laptop as a light because I don't have any light. Wait, it's raining. I'm gonna. You guys wanna hear? It sounds very cozy. Know if you guys can hear it all. It's not raining very loudly, so. Ooh. I was just holding it like near the window. Rain will make you sleepy, isn't it cozy? Very cozy. Okay, let's see. I feel awkward reading, but we can just do so. The fate of the British. Of the fate of British cycling changed one day in 2003. The organization, which was governing body for professional cycling in Great Britain, had recently hired Dave Brailsford as its new performance director. At the time, professional cyclists in Great Britain had endured nearly 100 years of mediocrity. Since 1908, the British riders had won just a single gold medal at the Olympic Games, and they had fared even worse in the cycling's biggest race, the Tour de France. In 110 years, no British cyclist has ever won the event. This is just British slander. In fact, the performance of British riders has been so underwhelming that one of the top bike manufacturers in Europe refused to sell bikes to the team because they were afraid that it would hurt sales if other professionals saw the Brits using their gear. Brailsford had been hired to put British cycling on a new trajectory. What made him different from previous coaches was his relentless commitment to a strategy that he referred to as the aggregation of marginal gains, which was the philosophy of searching for a tiny margin of improvement in everything you do. Brailsford said the whole principle came from the idea that if you broke down everything you could think of. Wait, this can't read, it's too dark. Could think of that goes into riding a bike, then you can improve it by 1%. You will get a significant increase when you put all of them together. Brailsford and his coaches began making small adjustments you might expect from a professional cycling team. They redesigned the bike seats to make them more comfortable and rubbed alcohol on the bike seats to make them more comfortable. Oh, wait, fuck. And they rubbed alcohol on the tires for better grip. Huh? Oh, they redesigned the seats. Oh, they asked riders to wear electric electrically heated overshorts to maintain ideal muscle temperature while riding, and used biofeedback sensors to monitor how each athlete responded to a particular workout. The team tested various fabrics in a wind tunnel, and their outdoor riders switched to indoor racing suits, which proved to be lighter and more aerodynamic. But they didn't stop there. Brosford and his team continued to find 1% improvements in overlooked and unexpected areas. They tested different types of massage gels to see which one led to the fastest muscle recovery. They hired a surgeon to teach each rider the best way to wash their hands to reduce the chances of catching a cold. They determined the type of pillow and mattress that led to the best night's sleep for each rider. They even painted the inside of the team's truck white, which helped them spot little bits of dust that would normally slip by unnoticed, but could degrade the performance of the finely tuned bikes. As these and hundreds of small other improvements accumulated, the results came faster than anyone could have imagined. Just 5 years after Brailsford took over, the British cycling team dominated the road and track cycling events at the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing, where they won an astounding 60% of the gold medals available. 4 years later, when the Olympic Games came to London, the Brits raised the bar and they set 9 Olympic records and 7 world records. The same year, Bradley Wiggins became the first British cyclist to win the Tour de France. The next year, his teammate Chris Froome won the race, and he would go on to win again in 2015, 2016, and 2017, giving the British team 5 Tour de France victories in 6 years. During the 10-year span from 2007 to 2017, British cyclists won 178 world championships and 66 Olympic or Paralympic gold medals, and captured 5 Tour de France victories in what is widely re regarded as the most successful run in cycling history. How does this happen? How does a team of previously ordinary athletes transform into world champions with tiny changes that at first glance would seem to make a modest difference at best? Why do small improvements accumulate into such a remarkable results? And how can you replicate this approach in your own life? Wow. It is so easy to overestimate the importance of one defining moment and underestimate the value of making small improvements on a daily basis. Too often, we convince ourselves that massive success requires massive action, whether it is losing weight, building a business, writing a book, winning a championship, or achieving any other goal. We put pressure on ourselves to make some earth-shattering improvement that everyone will talk about. Meanwhile, improving by 1% isn't particularly notable. Sometimes it isn't even noticeable, but it can be far more meaningful, especially in the long run. The difference a tiny improvement can make over time is astounding. Here's how the math works out. If you can get 1% better each day for 1 year, you end up 37 times better by the time you're done. Conversely, if you get 1% worse each day for 1 year, you'll decline nearly down to zero. What starts as a small win or a minor setback accumulates into something much more. Habits are compound interests of self-improvement, the same way that money multiplies through compound interest. The effect of your habit multiplies as you repeat them. They seem to make a little difference on any given day, and yet the impact they deliver over the months and years can be enormous. It is only when looking back 2, 5, or perhaps 10 years later that the value of good habits and the cost of bad ones becomes strikingly apparent. This can be a difficult concept to appreciate in daily life. We often dismiss small changes because they don't seem to matter very much in this mo in the moment. But if you save a little money now, you're still not a millionaire. If you go to the If you go to the gym 3 days in a row, you're still out of shape. If you study Mandarin for an hour tonight, you still haven't learned the language. We make a few changes, but the results never seem to come quickly, and so we slide back in our previous routines. Unfortunately, the slow pace of transformation also makes it easy to let a bad habit slide. If you eat an unhealthy meal today, the scale doesn't move much. If you work late tonight and ignore your family, they will forgive you. If you procrastinate and put your project off until tomorrow, there will usually be time to finish it later. A single decision is easy to dismiss. But when we repeat 1% errors day after day by replicating poor decisions, duplicating tiny mistakes, and rationalizing little excuses, our small choices compound into toxic results. It's the accumulate. Yeah. It's all it could accumulates all the tiny missteps. A 1% decline here and there that eventually leads to a problem. Guys, I never read English books. The impact created by a change in your habits is similar to the effect of shifting the route of an airplane by just a few degrees. Imagine you are flying from Los Angeles to New York City. If a pilot leaving from LAX adjust its heading just by 3.5 degrees south, you will land in Washington, D.C., instead of New York. Such a small change is barely noticeable at takeoff. The nose of the airplane moves just a few feet. But when magnified across the entire United States, you end up hundreds of miles apart. Similarly, a slight change in your daily habits can get your life to a very different destination. Making a choice that is 1% better or 1% worse seems insignificant in the moment, but over the span of moments that make up a lifetime, these choices determine a difference between who you are and who you could be. Success is the product of daily habits, not a once-in-a-lifetime transformation. Not once in a lifetime transformations. That said, it doesn't matter how successful or unsuccessful you are right now. What matters is whether your habits are putting you on the path towards success. You should be far more concerned with your current trajectory than with the current results. If you're a millionaire but spend more money than you earn each month, then you're on a bad trajectory. If your spending habits don't change, it's not going to end well. Conversely, if you're broke but you save a little every month, then you're on a path towards financial freedom, even if you're moving at a slower pace than you'd like. Your outcomes are a lagging measure of your habits. Your net worth is a lagging measure of your financial habits. Your weight is a lagging measure of your eating habits. Your knowledge is a lagging measure of your learning habits. Your clutter is a lagging measure of your cleaning habits. You get what you repeat. If you want to predict where you'll end up in life, all you have to do is follow the curve of tiny gains or tiny losses, and you see how your daily choices will compound 10 or 20 years down the line. Are you spending less than you earn each month? Are you making it into the gym each week? Are you reading books and learning something new every day? Tiny battles like these are the ones that will define your future self. Time magnifies the margin between success and failure. It will multiply when you feed it. Good habits make time your ally. Bad habits make time your enemy. Habits are a double-edged sword. Bad habits can cut you down just as easily as good habits can build you up, which is why understanding the details are crucial. You need to know how habits work and how to design them to your liking so you can avoid the dangerous half of the blade. Oh, fuck, I need to stretch. Give me a moment. Oh, I'm so stiff. I feel like the gym remark is directed at me. I'm sorry. Okay, so imagine that you have an ice cube sitting on the table in front of you. The room is cold and you can see your breath. It is currently 25 degrees. Ever so slowly, the room begins to heat up. 26 degrees, 27, 28. The ice cube is still sitting on the table in front of you. 29 degrees, 30, 31. Still nothing has happened. Then 32 degrees, the ice begins to melt. A 1 degree shift, seemingly no different from the temperature increases before that, has unlocked a huge change. Breakthrough moments are often the result of many previous actions, which build up the potential required to unleash a major change. This pattern shows up everywhere. Cancer spends 80% of its life undetectable, then takes over the body in months. Bamboo can barely be seen for the first 5 years as it builds extensive root systems underground before exploding 90 feet into the air within 6 weeks. There's all. That's good to know. Similarly, habits often appear to make no difference until you cross a critical threshold and unlock a new level of performance. In the early and middle stages of any quest, there is often a valley of disappointment. You expect to make progress in a linear fashion, and it's frustrating how ineffective changes can seem during the first days. Also, sorry, I hope the quality is still okay. Let me. My bed is very creaky. I want to lay down. Oh God, this eats on my phone, man. Okay, where was I? I need more light. Where was I? You expect to make progress in a linear fashion, and it's frustrating how ineffective changes can seem during the first days, weeks, and even months. It doesn't feel like you're going anywhere. It's a hallmark of any compounding process. The most powerful outcomes are delayed. This is one of the core reasons why it's so hard to build habits that last. People make small changes. People make a few small changes, fail to see a tangible result, and decide to stop. You think, I've been running every day for a month, so why can't I see any change in my body? Once this kind of thinking takes over, it's easy to let good habits fall by the wayside. But in order to make a meaningful difference, habits need to persist long enough to break through this plateau, what I call the plateau of latent potential. If you find yourself struggling to build a good habit or break a bad one, it is not because you have lost your ability to improve. It is often because you have not yet crossed the plateau of latent potential. Complaining about not achieving success despite working hard is like complaining about an ice cube not melting when you heated it from 25 to 21 degrees. Your work was not wasted, it is just being stored. All the action happens at 32 degrees. When you finally break through the plateau of latent potential, people will call it an overnight success. The outside world only sees the most dramatic event rather than all that preceded it. But you know that it's all the work that you did a long time ago when it seemed that you weren't making any progress that makes the jump today possible. It is the human equivalent of geological pressure. Two tectonic plates can grind against one another for millions of years, the tension slowly building all the while. Then one day they rub each other once again in the same fashion they have for ages. But this time the tension is too great. An earthquake erupts. Change can take years before it happens all at once. Mastery requires patience. The San Antonio Spurs, one of the most successful teams in NBA history, have a quote from social reformer Jacob Riis hanging in their locking room. When nothing seems to help, I go and look at a stone cutter hammering away at his rock, perhaps 100 times without as much as a crack showing in it. Yet at the 100th and the first blow, it will split in two. And I know it was not that last blow that did it, but all that had gone before. All big things come from small beginnings. The seed of every habit is a single tiny decision, but as that decision is repeated, a habit sprouts and grows stronger. Roots entrench themselves and branches grow. The task of breaking a bad habit is like uprooting a powerful oak within us. And the task of building a good habit is like cultivating a delicate flower one day at a time. I wanted to stay up until like 30 minutes ago, but if we go to sleep now, we can sleep 7.5 hours, I think. Yeah. Oh. But what determines whether we stick with our habit long enough to survive the plateau of latent potential and break through the other side? What is it that causes some people to slide into unwanted habits and enables others to enjoy the compounding effects of good ones? Prevailing wisdom claims that the best way to achieve what we want in life, getting into better shape, building a successful business, relaxing more and worrying less, spending more time with friends and family, is to set specific, actionable goals. For many years, this is how I approached my habits too. Each one was a goal to be reached. I set goals for the grades I wanted to get into school, for the weights I wanted to lift in the gym, for the profits I wanted to earn in business. I succeeded at a few, but I failed at a lot of them. Eventually, I began to realize that my results had very little to do with the goals I had set and nearly everything to do with the systems I followed. What's the difference between systems and goals? It's a distinction I first learned from Scott Adams, the cartoonist behind the Dilbert comic. What the fuck is that? Goals are about the goals you want to achieve. Systems are about the processes that lead to those results. If you're a coach, your goal might be to win a championship. Your system is the way you recruit players, manage your assistant coaches, and conduct practice. Use the sleep calculator to find the best time to go to sleep. I don't know, I'm probably gonna be tired tomorrow. If you're an entrepreneur, your goal might be to build a $1 million business. Your system is how you test product ideas, hire employees, and run marketing campaigns. If you're a musician, your goal might be to play a new piece. Your system is how often you practice, how you break down and tackle difficult measures, and your method for receiving feedback from your instructor. Now for the interesting question. If you completely ignored your goals and focused only on your system, would you still succeed? For example, if you were a basketball coach and you ignored your goal to win the championship and focused only on what your team does and practiced each day, would you still get the results? I think you would. Yeah. The goal in any sport is to finish with the best score, but it would be ridiculous to spend the whole game staring at the scoreboard. The only way to actually win is to get better each day. In the words of three-time Super Bowl winner Bill Walsh, the score takes care of itself. The same is true for other areas in life. If you want better results, then forget about setting goals. Focus on your system instead. What do I mean by this? Are goals completely useless? Of course not. Goals are good for setting a direction, but systems are best for making progress. A handful of problems arise when you spend too much time thinking about your goals and not enough about time designing your systems. Problem one, winners and losers have the same goals. Goal setting suffers from a serious case of survivorship bias. We concentrate on people who end up winning, the survivors, and mistakenly assume that ambitious goals led to their success while overlooking all the other people who had the same objective but didn't succeed. Every Olympian wants to win a gold medal. Every candidate wants to get a job. And if successful and unsuccessful people share the same goals, then the goal cannot be what differentiates the winners from the losers. It wasn't the goal of winning the Tour de France that propelled the British cyclists to the top of the sport. Presumably, they had wanted to win the race every year before that, just like every other professional team. The goal had always been there. It was only when they implemented a system of continuous small improvements that they achieved a different outcome. Problem two, achieving a goal is only a momentarily change. Imagine you have a messy room and you set a goal to clean it. need to clean my room. If you summon the energy to tidy it up, then you will have a clean room for now. But if you maintain the same sloppy pack rat habits that led to a messy room in the first place, soon you'll be looking at a new pile of clutter and hoping for another burst of motivation. You're left chasing the same outcome because you never changed the system behind it. You treated a symptom without addressing the cause. Achieving a goal only changes your life for the moment. That's the counterintuitive thing about improvement. We think we need to change our results, but the results are not the problem. What we really need to change are the systems that cause those results. When you solve problems at the results level, you only solve them temporarily. In order to improve for good, you need to solve problems at the systems level. Fix the inputs, and the outputs will fix themselves. Problem three: goals restrict your happiness. The implicit assumption behind any goal is this: once I reach my goal, then I'll be happy. The problem with a goals first mentality is that you're continually putting off happiness until the next milestone. I've slipped into this trap so many times I've lost count. For years, happiness was always something for my future self to enjoy. I promised myself that once I gained 20 pounds of muscle, or after my business was featured in the New York Times, then I could finally relax. Furthermore, goals create an either-or conflict. Either you achieve your goal and are successful, or you fail and you are a disappointment. You mentally box yourself into a narrow version of happiness. This is misguided. It is unlikely that your actual path through life will match the exact journey that you had in mind when you set out. It makes no sense to restrict your satisfaction to one scenario when there are many other paths to success. A systems first mentality provides the antidote. When you fall in love with the process rather than the product, you don't have to wait to give yourself permission to be happy. You can be satisfied anytime your system is running, and a system can be successful in many different forms, not just the one you first envision. Problem four: goals are at odds with long-term progress. Finally, a goal-oriented mind can create a yo-yo effect. Many runners work hard for months, but as soon as they cross the finish line, they stop training. The race is no longer there to motivate them. When all of your hard work is focused on a particular goal, what is left to push you forward after you achieve it? This is why many people find themselves reverting to their old habits after accomplishing a goal. The purpose of setting goals is to win the game. The purpose of building systems is to continue playing the game. True long-term thinking is goalless thinking. It is not about any single accomplishment. It is about the cycle of endless refinement and continuous improvement. Ultimately, it is your commitment to the process that will determine your progress. Is this an article that you're reading? No, it's a book. Okay, I'm almost done. If you're having trouble changing your habits, the problem isn't you. The problem is your system. Bad habits repeat themselves again and again, not because you don't want to change, but because you have the wrong system for change. You do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. Focusing on the overall system rather than a single goal is one of the core themes of this book. It is also one of the deeper meanings behind the word atomic. By now, you've probably realized that an atomic habit refers to a tiny change, a marginal gain, a 1% improvement. But atomic habits are not just any old habits, however small. They are little habits that are part of a larger system, just as atoms are the building blocks of molecules. Atomic habits are the building blocks of remarkable results. Habits are like the atoms of our lives. Each one is a fundamental unit that contributes to your overall improvement. At first, these tiny routines seem insignificant, but as soon as they build on each other and fuel bigger wins that multiply to a degree that far outweighs the cost of their initial investment. They are both small and mighty. This is the meaning of the phrase atomic habits, a regular practice or routine that is not only small and easy to do, but also the source of incredible power, a component of the system of compound growth. So to summarize everything, habits are a compound interest of self-improvement. Getting 1% better every day counts for a lot in the long run. Habits are a double-edged sword. They can work for you or against you, which is why understanding the details is essential. Small changes often appear to make no difference until you cross a critical threshold. The most powerful outcome of any compounding process are delayed. You need to be patient. An atomic habit is a little habit that is part of a larger system. Just as atoms are the building blocks of molecules, atomic habits are the building blocks of remarkable results. If you want better results, then forget about setting goals. Focus on your systems instead. You do not need to rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. Yee. What's the book title? Atomic Habits. I'm sitting up again. Okay. That was that. I'm gonna try to sleep. Maybe. Yes. Thank you all for listening. This won't be archived. Tomorrow I'll be back to streaming. I'll talk about my vacation. So I hope to see you all there. If you're not interested in hearing about that, you don't have to be there. You decide what you do with your life. Thank you for listening to me talking about random bullshit before the space as well. I appreciate you guys taking some time out of your day. Or maybe you're doing other stuff while you listen. I hope the quality wasn't too bad. It's still a phone. I've been listening to other spaces. Their quality sounds good. I don't know how this one is. I listened back to the one that I had with Geist and Donovo, and it was not great, but it's because I was constantly putting the phone down while we were doing dumb shit. And now I'm actually holding it to my face, so maybe it is better. Okay, time for me to go to bed. Again, thank you so much for listening. Should I do the thing that I always do to end the stream? And I will see you all next time. Bye bye.